got my bags packed and on a roll. I'm heading out there and I'm ready to go. I'm looking real good in my passport photo.
Amateur Traveler, episode 760. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about mountain passes and a natural hammam, cathedrals and caves, Romanesque churches and chocolate, as we go to the French Pyrenees. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about the Pyrenees Mountains. I'd like to welcome to the show Penny Walker from ConciergePyrenees.com, who's come to talk to us about travel to the Pyrenees Mountains between Spain and France. Penny, welcome to the show.
Hi there, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I've already put it on a map there for us, but what is your connection to the Pyrenees?
Yeah, I'm based in the central French Pyrenees, literally midway between the Atlantic coast and the Mediterranean, which is an absolutely wonderful part of the world, I have to say. I'm absolutely taken with the mountains and the way of life in this part of France. And I've been living here for nearly 15 years now. So very well integrated, absolutely passionate about the local life and the history and the culture and the food in particular that we find in the Pyrenees Mountains.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say from the accent that you are not originally from the Pyrenees.
Oh, that's absolutely spot on. Yes, I'm originally from Sheffield in the UK. So it's quite a change of environment, as you can imagine. We actually lived in the city in Sheffield. So from there to the foothills of the Pyrenees Mountains, it's like chalk and cheese. But it's certainly been one of the best moves I think I've ever made.
Excellent. And why should someone go to the Pyrenees?
There are so many reasons, Chris. It's hard to know where to start. But for me, and I think for a number of people, it's the environment, the unspoiled nature of the Pyrenees Mountains, how few tourists there are here, how few travellers. It's so unspoiled. It's a very authentic mountain destination. And certainly people who are outdoors lovers, people who love culture and food and wine, it's unmissable. It's very much not the Alps, I have to say. The whole environment is totally different to the Alps range, which is bigger. It's more frequented. There's more tourism there. It's a very different feel to the area and very, very friendly in the Pyrenees. That is one of the main reasons people should come here, is for the friendly nature of the locals.
Excellent. Well, what kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Oh, it's a mixture of outdoors activity, hiking with a healthy dose of food thrown in, a bit of wildlife, thermal spas, and basically there's a fairly good food element included in the itinerary that I would suggest.
Excellent. Well, where are we going to start?
Well, we'll start in Toulouse. That is the city in which most people arrive when they come to the Pyrenees. It's easy to get a flight from Paris down to Toulouse, which is a beautiful city. They call it La Ville Rose, the pink city.
We have an episode of Amateur Traveler on Toulouse.
Fantastic. So I'm sure your listeners will already be quite au fait with what the city has to offer. But it's a beautiful starting point for anybody coming down to the Pyrenees. It's a lovely city to visit. So, certainly I would suggest people fly into Toulouse or even take the train from Paris to Toulouse. And from there, they should hire a car and come down to the Pyrenees Mountains. It's only an hour and a half's drive, so it's very accessible.
And where are you going to base us?
You'd be based in the central French Pyrenees in the Bagnères de Luchon area, which is approximately 2 hours from the Atlantic coast and 2 hours from the Mediterranean coast. So literally halfway between the Atlantic and the Med. It's a beautiful area, the Luchon area, because you're surrounded by 3,000 metre peaks. That's nearly 10,000 feet in altitude. It's very much a mountainous area, but the valley, the Luchon Valley, is so accessible from the autoroutes and from the foothills in particular. So Luchon is an ideal starting point for anybody wanting to discover the central French Pyrenees. And I think one of the main things I like about the area is because it's so accessible, you can do hiking, you can do cycling, you can go to the thermal spas. experience of food. It's got everything that I think the traveler is looking for in an experience in a mountain environment.
Okay. Well, let's get more specific then. You say we can do hiking. What kind of hikes, which hikes rather, are you going to recommend?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it very much depends on how fit you're feeling, sure. How your legs are feeling. There are opportunities for both families, some really easy family-friendly hikes that kids even as young as 5 years old would absolutely love.
Like what?
There's one in particular that will take you along a lovely track from the Port de Barles, which is a col that's featured in the Tour de France many times. It's a lovely walk along a track with the most beautiful mountain views of the high mountains that border Spain. And it's probably about a couple of kilometres along an easy track. And then there's a path that will descend down, a really quite a rough path that descends down to this beautiful little lake. And it's the perfect spot for the summer to relax, to have a little picnic, to swim. It's a very popular swimming lake with the local people here. And it's also an area in which the brown bears have been known to frequent in the early springtime. This is before the tourists arrive, I should have to say. It's not while you're there.
And what is the tourist season in this area?
Typically, the tourism season is from June through until the end of August. Okay. The French tend to take their holidays in August. The whole of France practically is on holiday in August.
I tend to not recommend people go to France in August.
I mean, I would recommend the end of June, early July are, I think, the best times to visit the Pyrenees. And also in September, when the temperatures have calmed down a bit, when all the vacanciers or the tourists have left the area, this real peace is restored to the villages and the towns and the mountains as well. You won't find so many people at these swimming lakes. You've got the place pretty much to yourself. So, yeah, I would say probably end of June, early July, and then into September would be the perfect time to visit.
Okay. Well, you gave us a hike that was great for kids and families. If we wanted to get a little more adventurous, where would you send us?
Yeah, there are some fantastic mountain hikes, multi-day mountain hikes. Mm-hmm. You can do a hike that goes from refuge to refuge. Mm-hmm. We have a number of catered refuges up in the mountains where you will sleep either in a communal dorm, or at the moment people are putting up these big frame tents outside the refuges where people can have that more space and privacy, obviously in the current situation with the COVID pandemic. The refugees do food. They do evening meals and lunches as well, picnic lunches. And the ones that I work with, they very much do the local cuisine. They create their meals from produce that has been sourced locally and is often brought up into the mountains on muleback or on the back of donkeys. Although some obviously do have helicopter services that deliver the supplies as and when they're needed, and supplies of gas and this kind of thing. The high mountain refuges that I recommend are very much the authentic mountain refuges where people get a warm welcome. They are welcomed with open arms by the gardien who makes the meals in the evening, looks after the people staying in the dormitories, and generally makes your stay really something quite special. So it's highly recommended.
And if we wanted to get more specific and say one of the ones that I like to recommend is...
Oh, it's the Refuge de Venasque, which is high above the Luchon Valley, above the Hospice de France. It's a lovely walk up these zigzag paths that go up the hillside, up to a couple of little lakes called the Boume de Venasque, which are perfect lakes for swimming, cooling off at the end of a hike. The little refuge is adjacent to the lakes, and it's run in the summer by a lovely young family who are so welcoming. And the son, who's, I think he must be 5 at the time that we're talking, he absolutely loves welcoming visitors to the refuge and to playing with children who visit as well. He has company, which otherwise he doesn't tend to have in the summer months. So, and they do the most amazing food as well, absolutely delicious meals, which is quite surprising, I think, considering how off-grid the place is. It really is a fantastic experience. And from there, from the Refuge de Venasque, you can then do a hike that will take probably half an hour up to this little notch in the rocks called the Port de Venasque, from where you have literally, I call it, in your face mountain views with the highest peak in the Pyrenees just opposite you there in full view. Pic Aneto, 3,404 meters, literally fills your eyes as you look from this little notch in the rocks. It's a hike that even children can do. Children as young as 7 have done this particular hike and absolutely loved it. But if you're feeling more adventurous, if you're feeling you've got the legs and you really fancy a longer excursion, then you can carry on from the Port de Venasque, contouring around the hillside on the Spanish side of the Pyrenees, up to another notch in the hillside, another little col from where there's a descent route that will contour you, take you around the mountainside, back down to the starting point at Hospice de France. And on that particular route, you often see the chamois, the mountain goats that live in up in the mountains in this particular area. And you see eagles in the sky. You might even see the rarest vulture in the whole of Europe, the bearded vulture overhead, if you keep your eyes peeled and you know what you're looking out for. So it's a very special area. It holds a special place in my heart. I absolutely love it up there.
And I feel like my French teacher may have left out some vocabulary. I did not realize that the French word for pass, for mountain pass, is port.
Well, it can be. It can also be col. Certainly, okay. If you're talking about cycling and the Tour de France, you often hear the Col de Perissorde or the Col du Portillon or whatever. But these little notches, these little crossing points in the mountains, which you do on foot,
right,
they are called, a lot of them are called Port de Venasque, Port de Benaigua. That is more the word that is given to a crossing on foot. Yes, certainly. And these routes were often used in the Second World War as escape routes for the refugees and the escapees that were crossing the mountains to get away from the Nazi regime. And there are a lot of these ports across the Pyrenees that took them to safety in Spain.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, even though Franco was also fascist, he did remain neutral in World War II.
Indeed, indeed. So it was certainly a safer place to be than in France at the time.
Right. Interesting. Okay, so that was hiking, and you had also recommended thermal springs.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. The thermal springs, they are incredible here. There's one in particular that I absolutely love, and it's in the Luron Valley. It's in a little spot called Ludonvielle. And it's the Balnea Thermal Spa Facility, where they have these outdoor pools, a number of outdoor pools of different sorts. And they're open throughout the year. So even in the winter, you can go to the Balnea Spa Facility and be in these naturally heated, geothermally heated pools, looking up at the snow-clad mountains just ahead of you, at the head of the valley, soaking up the thermal waters and relaxing with just the most incredible views. It's a very special place. It really is.
And this is what we're doing after our hike, it sounds like.
This is a recovery, yes.
Excellent.
This is your recovery experience, indeed. And then also in the area, we have also the only natural hammam in Europe, what they call the Vaporarium.
Okay.
In Luchon, in Bagnères de Luchon, which is a gallery of underground cave system, all these galleries down below ground, which are naturally geothermally heated. And all the moisture and all the water that is underground is heated by...
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice, came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to butcherbox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
The heat in the rocks, geothermally heated to create this steam.
Okay.
So you can get a 40-degree hammam, 100% humidity in a totally natural environment. Hmm. Which is obviously quite a unique experience, you could say. It's something that it has to be your kind of thing. Personally speaking, it's not mine. I'm not really too big on this kind of heat and humidity, but it's certainly very popular as a recovery exercise, that's for sure.
Well, and if people aren't familiar with the term hammam, we're talking about a steam bath, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. And in a cave.
It's in a cave, literally. You sort of open this door.
I'm looking at the pictures, and it's a very odd look.
It is. I mean, the galleries underground, I can't remember exactly how long they go on for, but it's a series of galleries all networked underground. And you literally open the door, the entrance door to them, and this the humidity and the heat just hits you. That's as far as I've got. I've not actually ventured much below ground to have the full experience, but it's certainly one that people do recommend as a recovery experience if you have had a hard day on the bike, cycling the coals, or a big day in the mountains on two feet. So, if it's your bag, then, go for it.
Excellent. And what else are we going to do while we're in the Lushan Valley?
Well, while you're in Lushan, one of the exceptional things that you won't find anywhere else that you can do is spend a half day with our local bear expert.
Okay.
Yeah, well, this is quite an experience if you are interested, even vaguely interested in wildlife, because we have over 60 brown bears that are concentrated in the Central Pyrenees where we are. And I work with the local bear experts who take members of the public out on an easy hike. It's half day, probably a couple of hours of hiking, where you can learn all about the life of the bears in the Pyrenees. You can look for the tracks of the bears in an off-grid situation, a wild and rugged area where they are known to frequent. Mm-hmm. And also look for their hair, the fur that they leave on the trees, on their favourite rubbing trees, where there are collecting points, barbed collecting points. Mm. And the guide explains all about the bear was here. You can see the fur on the collecting point. This is his behaviour. This is how they live. This is how they affect the local environment and the people in the area. It's really a fascinating experience, Chris, if you're even vaguely interested in wildlife. It's an experience I always recommend that people have if they come to an area. But you have to know the right contacts in order to enjoy that experience. It's one that the locals know about, so get in touch.
Excellent. Now, I also see in one of the pictures that I'm looking at of the valley, there are gondolas that are going up to the mountain peaks. If I don't have the energy to climb, it looks like I still have the opportunity to go up and see some of the views.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, in the summer, July and August, there's a gondola that runs from Lushan Town Centre all the way up to the Super Bannière Plateau. And from there, there's hiking. You can do a number of lovely, lovely hikes up there. Or in the winter, obviously it's a ski resort in the winter, but there are also snowshoeing routes that you can do up on the plateau.
Okay.
What I always recommend to people who are visiting the area and going up in the gondola for the first time is to make sure you time it for lunchtime and have a meal at my favourite restaurant up there that's called La Chapelle.
Okay.
Now, La Chapelle serves what I have been told are the best burgers in the world. This is from a family that I welcomed to the area last year. Their teenage son said they are seriously the best burgers that they've ever had. And the one thing that I really, really like about La Chapelle is that they use local products. Everything is sourced within a 30, 40 kilometre radius. Many of the products are sourced actually from the valley. The beers that they serve are brewed down in Lushan in a little microbrewery. All of the products that they use come from the local producers, which to me, it's all about responsible tourism. It's all about eating local, supporting local communities, supporting local producers. So definitely put La Chapelle on your list of must-eat theirs because it's unmissable.
Interesting. I'd say I have a little bit of skepticism. I haven't found that Europe is the best place to get a burger, but
you need to come.
I would try it. I would try it with an open mind.
Yeah, no, it's if this family said they were the best burgers they've ever eaten, I'll tell you, I mean, they are good. They are good. I don't tend to eat that much meat myself, but
I would just need to know whether that family was from Surrey or Texas.
From the UK.
There you go.
Yeah, good point.
Excellent. What else are we going to do in the area?
The other thing I would really recommend that people do is visit some of the local producers, food producers, as well as craft artisans in the area. I'd really recommend people visit one of the goat's farms in the area where they produce incredible artisanal cheeses. Now, I know a lot of people have eaten a particular goat's cheese and said, oh, I don't like goat's cheese. It's too strongly flavoured. I don't like it. But if they go to this particular goat's farm that I would recommend, they have the chance to taste an incredible variety of goat's cheeses, mm-hmm. some that have literally been made the day before, really soft, soft, tangy goat's cheeses that people have probably never experienced before. It's the more mature, the drier, more refined cheeses that have the really quite overpowering flavour that is what people really don't enjoy. And the other really good thing about this particular goat's farm is that you can actually experience the milking process. So you can see how these goats are actually being milked and what happens to the milk afterwards and the whole process of cheese making. So it's a complete experience. It's not just a visit to a goat's farm and, oh, let's taste a bit of cheese. It's far more than that.
Although that sounded fine to me just there, but I like a good goat cheese as well as other types of cheese. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, goat's cheese is very big in the area, but also ewe's milk, sheep's cheese, which is my particular favourite. And cheese in the Pyrenees, or in fact anywhere, it's seasonal, obviously, which many people really don't appreciate. You go to the supermarket normally, you just pick up a pack of cheese, don't you, without really appreciating where it's come from or how it's been produced. But there's a particular sheep's milk cheese in the Pyrenees that is the most common one. It's called Osso Irati, which has a completely different flavour in the springtime and the summer months than it does in the autumn and the winter.
That makes perfect sense, but I would never thought of that. They're eating the clover on the hills versus...
Exactly. Exactly. Huh. Yeah, this is what really alters the flavour of the cheese, is the diet of the animals. I love the variety in the cheeses and the different flavours that you get throughout the year. It's all part of the joy to me of eating cheese. I have to tell you, I am a big cheese eater. I have a loyalty card to the local sheep's farm to buy their cheeses. So that tells you something.
Excellent. Now, if we are looking for a little more adventure, any more other adventurous things you're going to throw our way?
Oh my goodness, there is so much adventurous stuff that you can do in the area. Obviously, it depends on people's attitude to adventure, I guess, and how hungry they are for adrenaline sports. But one that is extremely popular, especially with teenagers and families with older children in particular, is the river rafting.
Oh, sure.
And this is even in the summer months. I mean, normally you'd expect the river levels to be really low in, say, August, late July, August. But we have the benefit here of hydroelectric facilities upriver across the border in the Aran Valley in Spain, which they're timed water releases. And they, when they set those releases going, they turbocharge the river, which, as you can imagine, can make for quite an exciting rafting descent. So I always recommend people go for the section of river with the particular rafting company that takes advantage of these water releases to enjoy the most adrenaline-fueled experience. And we're talking grade 4 or 5 rapids.
Okay. And is there a particular town we should go to or an outfitter you recommend?
The town of St. Beat is the one that I normally use. That is the most reliable, the most professional river rafting area. The people I work with are based in the St. Beat area. They are really professional. They are totally committed to giving people the most fun, the safest experience on the river. And that is always the area that I would go to, yeah.
Okay.
So apart from the river rafting, Mountain biking is huge in this area of the Pyrenees. Mm-hmm. If anybody is into the downhill mountain biking, whether it's the enduro style of mountain biking or pure downhill, the area, the Luron Valley area of the Pyrenees, is literally a world-class mountain biking destination. We've got a round of the World Series happening here in September this year, 2021, which is a really big coup for the Luron Valley. It's really putting the area on the map and marking it out as being completely compatible with places in the Alps such as Morzine and Leger, which are big mountain biking destinations. So a lot of work is going on in the area for mountain biking, and their efforts are paying off. It's being recognised. And I work with a lot of the local guides in the area who will take people on these world-class runs and introduce them to literally some of the best mountain biking that they will find in Europe, which is saying something, but I totally believe that is the case.
Now, you reminded me of something. You were comparing it to the Alps, and when we started, you said Pyrenees quite different from the Alps. Different in what way?
Far more authentic.
Okay.
A lot of the Alpine areas, they suffer from over-tourism. If you go there in July and August, like, for instance, at Chamonix area, which is the honeypot destination, and Annecy even, a lot of people will go to those areas. They do have a bit of an over-tourism issue. Obviously, they're easy to access from the UK or from Geneva Airport. Whereas here in the Pyrenees, we are much less known. It's a much less visited mountain destination. Mm-hmm. The area has retained its authenticity. We have, as I say, the wild bears would not be here if the area was anything like the Alpine areas, the Northern Alps. The bears are happy in this part of the world, as are the bearded vultures, the rarest vulture in Europe, because it is so undeveloped, because it's so wild and rugged and, as I say, authentic. The other thing with, I think, the Pyrenees is we do have this double culture thing because of the proximity of Spain. We have the Occitan language that is spoken freely in the area. We have the Catalan influence is very heavy here. The food and the culture is a real hot pot of both France and Spain. That is a really strong element of life in the Pyrenees.
Well, and you've been wanting to get into food for a while, so let's talk about some of the other food experiences.
Oh, goodness, food, yes. Chocolate. Can we talk chocolate, Chris? Let's talk chocolate. Chocolate is a big thing in the Pyrenees. We have a number of chocolatier, master chocolate makers. They open up they call them laboratoire. It's their workshop, basically, where members of the public can actually see them at work. They can see them creating these ranges of ganaches and fondants and fantastic chocolate treats, which is it's quite an experience, actually, to see it being done hands-on in front of your eyes and then to be able to taste the product at the end of the process. That, obviously, is the absolute icing on the cake, or the cerise sur le gâteau, as they say here. Chocolate is my favourite, absolute favourite thing. And I think one of the main reasons I'm so into the chocolate is because it's quality. There's no rubbish added to the chocolate that they produce here. No palm oil. It's all pure ingredients, pure cocoa beans that they use that have been ethically sourced, that have been properly treated, and the whole process is very pure. And people, the master chocolatiers, are passionate about what they do. They love sharing their craft with members of the public.
Now, is that something I'm going to find in the Luchon Valley, or where am I going for the chocolatiers?
Down here, it's more in the foothills. It's closer to the autoroute. There's a little spot in La Batte de Nest, which is my absolute favourite, called Les Flocons Pyrénéens. Bernardino is a master chocolate maker there. He is an absolute darling, and he's a really whimsical chap, actually. He's made a wonderful new creation called Le Virus. The Virus, which is this little ganache chocolate, which has got little pieces of red, dried red fruit studded into this round chocolate ganache to look like the virus. And it's been its bestseller. It's been his bestseller this past 12 months.
Oh, gosh. I'm just catching on which virus you're talking about. Okay. I don't know why I didn't know what you were talking about here in 2021 when we're recording this. Oh, that's funny.
So, yes, he's got a bit of a sense of humour, shall we say. We have a couple of other really unusual food producers in the area, one of which is a saffron producer, where they grow the saffron crocuses in the foothills. Okay. And they harvest the saffron in the autumn, October, November time, and create all kinds of lovely products. It's saffron mustard and saffron infusions, saffron cordials. And again, they open their farm to the public and people can actually go and visit and look at how they produce the saffron products in the facility. That's a really unusual experience, and certainly October is the best time to visit when all the crocus are in flower and those bright red stamina just take over the field in front of the farm.
Now, is that Saffron de l'Arbison?
No, it's not Saffron de l'Arbison. That is actually further west along the chain. Here, this is in the Nistos area.
Okay.
So a little farm in the Nistos area, which is... it's run on a very similar way to the Arbison product. Obviously, it's the same kind of saffron.
Got it.
It's delicious.
Excellent.
Apart from that, the other really unusual product that you wouldn't expect to find in the Pyrenees is raspberry champagne.
Okay.
It's not actually champagne, but it's made according to the champagne method. So she uses raspberries to produce this gorgeous sparkling wine. The raspberry canes are grown on this hillside above the Luron Valley. It's just a spectacular setting. And she welcomes visitors to her farm in the summer and tells them about the production of the champagne, how she goes about harvesting the raspberries, and why she got into this particular line of business in the first place. Estelle is a fascinating lady, and it's somewhere I would highly recommend people make an effort to visit if they are in the Luron Valley area of the Pyrenees.
Okay. What kind of side trips are you going to recommend? We're staying in the Luron Valley. Where are we going to head for a day?
There is so much to explore around the Luron Valley. The little Romanesque churches are well worth seeking out. There's a big, big historic interest in the Luron Valley and the Aure Valley going up to Saint-Lary. And in particular, the village of Arreau, A-R-R-E-A-U, Arreau, which is the crossroads of the two valleys, the crossroads of the Luron and the Aure valleys. It's a lovely old medieval town which has a fabulous Thursday morning market where all the local producers will come and sell their products. And you can meet all these food producers and chat with them and find out what rocks their world, basically, why they do what they do, why they're passionate about the life in the Pyrenees and the products that they produce. And certainly worth seeking out the historic sites such as the UNESCO heritage sites that we have in the area, like Saint-Bertrand de Comminges, which is a big cathedral that is on this little hilltop down in the foothills. And there's a UNESCO registered church nearby as well, Saint-Just de Valcabrère, which is well worth a visit for its paintings and its charm and character. And we've also got the Grotte de Gargas, which is a prehistoric cave system, again, in the foothills. And it's known for the stenciled hand paintings that are underground there in the cave system, which date back to the Magdalenian period, about 14,000 years ago.
Now, is that something you can tour, though? Because I know some of those have been closed to protect them.
You can tour it, absolutely, okay. Yes. They're very much restricted in the visiting periods and the number of people they allow down there, the amount of time that you can spend underground. But they are open to the public, and they do guided visits both in English and in French. I don't know about you, but it gets my imagination working. Whenever I'm in a prehistoric situation where you can just visualize the people that were in that environment all those thousands of years ago, imagine what their life must have been like. And these are the first people in the Pyrenees. Mm-hmm. I mean, my imagination just goes into overdrive whenever I'm in that kind of situation.
Yeah, I've had a chance in southern Spain to see 10,000-year-old hand paintings on the walls, and it's just fascinating to me.
Absolutely. Yeah, it is fascinating.
Excellent. What else should we make sure that people know about while they're touring the Pyrenees before we start to do our wrap-up questions?
I think it's important that they know about the wildlife of the area and how precious the ecosystem is in the Pyrenees. And to me, the best way to learn about the wildlife is by using the local guides. They, apart from anything else, they appreciate your support, but they are the most knowledgeable people in the area. They're the people who are here permanently, who understand the environment, can tell you about the wildlife, can tell you about the endemic flora that's in the area, in the mountains and in the foothills, who can really give people a much deeper experience and help them to understand the environment that they're in and why it's so special. So use the local guides is my really top tip. I mean, the locals are so friendly here. The people are so welcoming. If you even make a half an attempt to speak French, they will just warm to you. There are a lot of places where if you speak English, they can be really standoffish and maybe quite rude to you. But the Pyrenees is such a friendly environment. That is really one of the most special things about this part of the world. Supporting the local communities, supporting the local producers, experiencing what the Pyrenees has to offer is the real highlight of any trip, any stay to this part of the world.
Well, shall we get to some of our wrap-up questions then?
Please do.
You were standing in the prettiest spot in the Pyrenees. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Oh, gosh, I'm standing up on this little promontory up at 2,200 meters altitude near the Pic de Calabas, looking at the vast range, the Pyrenees range, spread out in front of me. Just mountains, and it's complete peace and quiet. All I can hear are the birds, and all I can see are mountains. It's something that it's really hard to sort of explain and to get across, and the effect that it can have on you. Just standing in this mountain environment, surrounded by nothing but nature, and absorbing all that nature is offering you, and the peace and the quiet. It's very, very special.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say, only in the Pyrenees.
That's a hard one. I mean, funnily enough, what makes me laugh are the animals.
Okay.
The marmots in particular always make me laugh. They're so comical. Sometimes when we're hiking in the mountains, you often hear this whistle that comes out of nowhere. This pile of rocks is a whistle and a sort of a screech. And you think, what on earth is that? And then you sort of tune it and you can suddenly see this shape, this round, brown, furry shape that's just sat on a rock staring at you. Whistling, its alarm call basically is what it's doing. It's shouting out this alarm call to warn the other marmots. Oh, there's a danger. And then they'll just sort of disappear underground in the flash of an eye. But if you're lucky, if you stay really still and you're in the right situation, you can actually get a photo or a short video of these amazing little creatures, which they really are comical. They do make me laugh every time I see them. So yeah, marmots, to answer your question.
And if you had to summarize this region of the Pyrenees in three words, what three words are you going to use?
Authentic.
Okay.
Rugged. Beautiful.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Penny Walker from ConciergePyrenees.com. And Penny, you help people plan trips to the Pyrenees. So if they're looking for more information that they didn't hear, how should they contact you?
Yeah, they can contact me through the website, conciergepyrenees.com. I'll just spell Pyrenees for you because I know a lot of people do spell it wrong. It's PYRENEES. PYRENEES.
And it's also printed right there on your podcast device as the name of this episode. So
exactly. Perfect. So they can contact me through the website, and they can also email me, penny@conciergepyrenees.com.
And if they go to your website, which I'm not going to try and say again because I'm pushing my luck, is there a great resource that we should direct them to that they should use as they're planning the trip?
All the website is the resource, to be honest with you. Basically, I create trips on demand. All the trips are tailor-made depending on the interest that people have, what they want to experience, whether that's hiking, adventure, horse riding, mountain biking, family multi-activity, or whether they want to experience the history, the culture, the food. And I tailor-make each trip according to their preferences. So, yeah, get in touch if you're looking for a bespoke trip to the Pyrenees anytime in hopefully the near future when travel reopens again.
Excellent.
So let me plan your trip.
Well, Penny Walker, thanks so much for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for the Pyrenees.
It's been my absolute pleasure, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on.
As always, a special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support the show financially. If you want to become a patron, you can go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler and get an ad-free version of the show, get the show a little earlier than everybody else, and get that monthly Zoom call plus some swag at different levels. And if you don't feel that you want to or can't support the show right now, just tell a friend about the show or leave a review. I asked people in the Amateur Traveler Trips group and also in the Facebook page, the Amateur Traveler Facebook page, what kind of shows you would like to see on Amateur Traveler. I'm trying to book the next round of interviews, and if there's some particular destination you don't think we have covered recently or we haven't covered at all, please let me know. And especially if you know somebody who'd be really good, since you know the way the show sounds, I would be interested in your feedback. So just drop an email to host@amateurtraveler.com and give me your show ideas. I'm always looking for new interviews. And with that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.